You're listening to The Diplomats podcast on Asia geopolitics. I'm Ankit Panda, your co-host, recording in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Katie Putz, your other co-host, also in Washington, D.C.
Hey, Katie, good to be back with you. How's it going?
It's going.
It is going indeed, as are things in Southern Asia, which is where we're going to turn our attention today, to clashes between Afghanistan and Pakistan. We're recording this on October 16th. There's been a ceasefire announced, but of course we saw a major escalation in the first or the second week of October when the fighting between the two countries that's been on and off for more than a year now, particularly since the Taliban have been consolidating power in Pakistan, that sort of spilled over with Pakistani airstrikes, notably into the Afghan capital of Kabul. And that was followed by a series of smaller exchanges between the two sides as the Taliban retaliated. There's a lot to dig into here, particularly about, you know, whether this is a problem of Pakistan's own making in many ways, having sort of tolerated a uncomfortable alliance with the Taliban for a number of years that is now blowing back on Pakistan. The key Pakistani objective with these strikes appears to have been to try to take out the leader of the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, Nurwali Masood. As far as I know, still unconfirmed whether they were able to get him. I think it's very unlikely that they did in these strikes. But there's a lot here, I think, to zero in on, especially, you know, this is Pakistan's arguably second major military clash with a neighbor this year after the violence in May with India. It wasn't too long ago, too, that the Pakistanis had were launching ballistic missiles into Iran when that border dispute flared up a little more than a year ago. Things are on better terms now with the Iranians. But Katie, walk us through a little bit about what's been going on here between the Afghan Taliban in particular and the Pakistani military on the other hand.
Yeah, so there's a long history here that we're probably not going to get entirely into, but the more recent trajectory is over the past year or so, there has been a steady sort of ratcheting up of tensions between Afghanistan and Pakistan, between the Afghan Taliban and the Pakistani state. We've seen bombings at border checkpoints, airstrikes, particularly in border regions, and then some direct clashes between Taliban and Pakistani border guards. All of this escalated further on October 9th when Pakistan reportedly carried out that series of airstrikes, including into Kabul. Pakistan allegedly claims that it killed TTP leader Nurwali Masood. The TTP released an audio of him speaking, unclear the dates on that. It you know, this is pretty much par for the course if we can kind of think back to when everybody thought the Taliban's leader had been killed and they kept him alive on paper for years after. And so Mullah Omar, for those who don't remember. So I agree with you, Ankit. I don't think it's clear that they got the target that they were going after. Something else I think is kind of interesting is that while there has been a ceasefire declared, both sides say that the other requested a 48-hour ceasefire. So it's unclear who really, really wanted this. But both of them are able to claim that the other is the one that came seeking terms. We'll see how long that lasts and to what effect. But curiously, and maybe just because of who I am, I think it's interesting that sort of while they've agreed on this ceasefire, neither has really been officially clear as to what happened anyway. Pakistan has not confirmed that it did these strikes, and the Taliban hasn't said that they actually were struck. And so it's telling that there's a ceasefire, but they haven't really commented on the actual instigating incident. So we shall see how that pans out. But it is definitely indicative of this tension that exists between the Taliban, which is now in power in Afghanistan, and Pakistan, which for decades has supported the Afghan Taliban while sort of fighting its own version, the TTP.
Yeah. So, you know, the relationship between the Afghan Taliban and the TTP is one that clearly the Pakistanis are unable to control or shape, right? They want the two Talibans essentially to put a bit of distance between them and for the Afghan Taliban to, of course, not allow the TTP to basically operate with impunity on Afghan controlled soil. And, you know, that appears to be the core issue that, first of all, does not appear to have been solved with this particular skirmish. And I just don't see where this is going. I mean, are the Pakistanis going to now get into the business of basically imposing costs and punishment on the Taliban anytime there is a attack on Pakistani soil that crosses certain thresholds? I mean, you know, I think it's just worth noting here that for about the last year, year and a half, violence along the Afghan-Pakistani border has just been simmering with a number of attacks by the TTP. So what's your sense there, Katie?
Yeah, I mean, there has long been this tension. And, you know, the Taliban has consistently denied harboring militant groups such as the TTP. This will sound very familiar to everyone. You know, they deny harboring a lot of militant groups over the last several decades. But they strongly deny that they are assisting the TTP in any fashion. Pakistan insists that the Afghan Taliban is harboring and helping in some degree the TTP. I think what's clear is that the TTP is able to operate in this border region. Now, who's to blame for their ability to operate in this border region is an interesting question that we don't have the answer to. I think, you know, the most generous take is that the Taliban simply doesn't have the capacity or the capability to control its border regions, but also Pakistan doesn't have the capacity and capability to control its border regions. And so because there's that, you know, it's very easy to blame the other side for the problem. I feel like Pakistan in particular is not doing the introspection it needs to do regarding the TTP's support in Pakistan. Regardless of what support it may or may not get from Afghanistan, the TTP is a Pakistani organization. And I think it's conditions in Pakistan that give rise to this group and give it sort of the fodder of grievances that allow it to recruit members and to stage these attacks. And so I think it is convenient to blame the Afghan Taliban, and it may even be true and fair to blame the Afghan Taliban for supporting the TTP. But some of that blame also has to fall into Pakistan. I don't think they really want to deal with this. And this gets into the longer history that Pakistani authorities have in supporting, you know, militant groups as proxy forces in other places, that's kind of coming back to bite them. And so it's a hard problem to solve because I don't think either side is being particularly transparent or clear. And that's not a shocking thing to observe, but is still true.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, the kind of perennial problem in a way of this incredibly porous and difficult to govern, you know, Durand line border between the two countries, I think, continues to be a fundamental and sort of systemic feature here that's likely to, I think, just contribute to this dynamic continuing. So there's some other interesting kind of geopolitical angles here, right? I mean, it's notable to me that this clash and Pakistan's willingness to use force against the Afghan Taliban in this somewhat unprecedented way with airstrikes deep into Kabul, for instance, takes place after India, Pakistan's rival, appears to have pretty much normalized relations with the Taliban. Without saying as much, I mean, India didn't say they recognize the Taliban, but they're upgrading the Indian presence in Kabul to an embassy, which is a term that very strongly implies diplomatic normalization. Is the India angle here something that is perhaps spooking the Pakistanis as well? You know, there is sort of a logic of not that, you know, Narendra Modi's India and the Afghan Taliban have a lot in common in terms of shared worldviews, but there is something of, I think, an enemy of my enemy is my friend dynamic playing out between India and the Afghan Taliban here. How does that look to you?
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's worth mentioning also that alongside sort of India's announcement that it would upgrade its technical team, I think is what they called it previously, to an embassy in Kabul, is that the Afghan Foreign Minister Mutaki was in India for a visit. That says something about the level of relations. Now, whether we call it official recognition or not, I don't. That's sort of an academic question, but it's clear that India is coming to grips with the reality of the Taliban rule in Afghanistan and is willing to move forward and work on that angle. And I think that has to chafe Pakistan a bit. That was long for, you know, even in the Republic era, the Afghan Republic. The closer India got to the Afghan government, the more uncomfortable Pakistan was with it. And so I think that's going to be true regardless of what what government is sitting in Kabul, and maybe more so, more frustrating given the long history between Pakistan and the Afghan Taliban, and sort of the assistance rendered to the Afghan Taliban over, you know, 20 plus years. Doesn't seem to have resulted in what maybe Pakistan really wanted, which was, I think, a compliant neighbor. And that's not what they're getting with the Taliban. Now, what the long-term or even the medium-term implications of this is unclear. I am not confident that this ceasefire is going to hold very much longer. I think maybe tensions will die down a little bit and then we will see another attack because, as you mentioned, the border is really porous and there's a lot going on there. Over the last, you know, year, I think it's last year or so, Pakistan has been pushing a lot of Afghan refugees back into Afghanistan, and that's creating a lot of flows of people that can mask sort of movements of other individuals. You continue to see sort of attacks on particularly Chinese interests in those border regions. And so I think we're going to continue. I think that's going to come back. I don't think this problem has been solved. And I think it comes back to just the inability of both sides to really come to grips with the fact that securing this border is going to take both sides serious attention, and that's going to include, like I said earlier, some introspection as to why this is so difficult and why militant groups find fertile soil and people to recruit in these places. And I don't see either side being particularly amenable to those hard conversations that need to happen. And then if you want to take that even broader, right, I don't know. I have not seen what China's reaction to this has been, but China has to be watching this carefully. I'm sure the United States is watching this carefully. You know, it's not just the interests of Afghanistan, Pakistan that are at risk here. There's certainly a lot more interested parties.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I will definitely take that bet as well that this ceasefire is not going to be the stickiest thing in the world. It will probably fall apart quite soon. In terms of the other parties, you know, it was notable to me that, you know, Saudi Arabia and Qatar, you know, two countries, the Saudis obviously having just concluded a mutual defense pact with the Pakistanis that we talked about just a few weeks ago, and the Qataris, which have an interesting relationship, to say the least, with the Taliban, both sort of urged restraint, but neither appears to have been successful in directly kind of mediating or intervening. And I guess President Trump implied that this would be the latest conflict that he would add to his long list of Nobel Peace Prize hunting mediation attempts. So we'll see. I mean, you know, maybe the U.S. will get involved. I mean, I guess on that note, Katie, do these clashes improve the odds of the U.S. getting back into Bagram by any means?
Oh man, I don't think so. I mean, I think that I'm glad you brought up Bagram because it is an interesting issue to talk about, and we've published a couple of articles referencing this. But there's, you know, it is. That is such a Trumpian comment to make that, you know, we're just going to go back and take it. But when you start looking at the logistical elements, like set aside the strategic logic of having a base in Afghanistan, just the pure logistics of retaking that base and then maintaining that base, that's effectively why there was a 20-year war. You know, it would be almost impossible for just purely technical reasons. The United States doesn't have, for example, overflight access across Central Asia. It's not going to fly through Iran. And then Pakistan may or may not help on that angle, but then the United States is back to being reliant on Pakistan for access. That would shock me beyond almost anything if the United States decided to take Bagram again. But, you know, it does factor into that U.S.-Pakistan relationship, which has been improving. You know, we've seen the Pakistani prime minister has had, you know, sit down at the White House. The military chiefs have also had pretty good reception in Washington. And so there's clearly the United States is cozying up to Pakistan again, and we'll have to see if that has any impact on that, on the Afghanistan-Pakistan border or the larger relationship. But we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens indeed. All right, Katie, I think we'll leave it there for today. We'll keep a close eye, of course, on how this shapes up in the coming weeks and months. So for listeners, thanks for listening. If you like what you heard on the show, make sure you subscribe to keep up with future episodes. As you might know, these episodes are now also available on YouTube, so you can also watch these conversations if you're so inclined. And in the meantime, don't forget to leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. We really do take that feedback seriously. And if you have suggestions for future coverage, please do reach out to either myself or Katie. Thanks a lot for listening.
Thank you.